Life support is nominal. The oxygen danger indicator level is yellow. Please remember that this is a non-smoking pirate ship.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge. I'm John Breeden, your chief lounge lizard, and your host for this episode of the show. Put on your reading glasses, because we are going to be talking about books this week, right here in the lounge. Well, books about games, but books nonetheless. Books about games and books based on game worlds, which are extremely popular these days. And so joining me is Marie. Marie, welcome to the lounge today.
Hey, how you doing?
No problem. And one cool thing is that Marie Flanagan is also a published author herself. Marie, tell us a little bit about the book that you published.
Oh, well, I wrote a book called One Big Beautiful Thing. Sadly, it is not about video games.
It is not about World of Warcraft?
It is not. although, the character in my current book that I'm working on does play video games, so woo. But, One Big Beautiful Thing is not about video games, but it is well-received, and you can get it on Amazon if you're so interested.
Cool.
But, yeah, actually, I thought we would talk about books that are about video games today.
Oh, no, absolutely. There's been an awful lot of them, and Colin, actually, your husband, reviews an awful lot of them, although he farms out the Warcraft books to one of our diehard Warcraft fans, but he reviews mostly everything else for us, and there's an awful lot of these. I mean, these type of books became popular about, I'm going to say like 10 years ago, we started to see them, here and there, but now, Marie, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you being an author, you keep your hand on the pulse of the literary world, but this is something that, it's almost built into the game plan anymore. It's like, you know, this game will come out and then these three books will come out as well.
Yeah, actually, that's definitely the case, particularly for, big games. And then ironically, there are books that are produced that they kind of smack a game onto to try and do the reverse of that and generate interest in the book. So far, the only time I've seen that done, it was a catastrophic failure. But when they do the reverse and you've got this complex game world, they bring in some really great authors, to write additional lore and to write additional adventures with the characters. And some of those books based on game worlds are fantastic.
Is the bad one you're talking about, is that, was that Journey to Rainbow Island?
Well, I guess,
John, it is. Yeah. That was the one. Well, that was the one where they, apparently the book was fairly well received by people, but the game that it was based on was basically like a little, I don't know, flash app or like a, you know, an iOS type of game, and it was just really bad.
It's terrible. It added nothing to the book, which I have to say, I didn't particularly care for the book. You know, it was around the house. I think Colin reviewed it, and he didn't care for it either. And it wasn't just that it was aimed at middle-aged readers, because that was not our issue. It's just, I don't know. I didn't think any of that was, it was not good. It was not good.
Right. Well, the most recent one that he reviewed, was, based on the Dragon Age.
Oh yeah. The Masked Empire. He loved that.
Yeah. That seemed really cool. That was like a, the author was, Patrick Weeks. And, you know, reading his review, it was like these bards that are in the Dragon Age franchise, I guess. They may not be necessarily in the new game that's coming out, but they were bards who were like spies, and there was all this intrigue and stuff, and it sounded really cool.
Yeah, he loved it. I mean, it was complex. Now, he is a big Dragon Age player. So, you know, I know that's part of the reason he loved it, but he said that you really didn't have to play the games to enjoy it, that it was just enjoyable fantasy in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a position that I actually find myself in with a lot of these with a lot of these books that are based on games. So before the show started, I went to my library and I looked at some of the books that are based on games that I've read recently that I really enjoyed. And so there's the Gears of War, the Slab, which I don't play Gears of War. I know that a lot of our Xbox reviewers are diehard love Gears of War. I know Todd thinks it's one of the best series. I know Kelly used to really love the Gears of War series and stuff, but I've never actually played it. So the thing about the Slab was, when I was reading it, there were some references that I didn't get. Like, they kept talking about the grubs, and those are like the main enemy in the game, I suppose. And I had an idea of what they were, but they never really described them to me. So I was kind of a little bit lost, but the story and stuff was really awesome. And, you know, I enjoyed it without actually playing the game, which I don't know if that's necessarily the marketing reason these books come out, but it's possible to enjoy the book and never play the game.
Well, I think that's when you've got those are your best movie tie-in, or those are your best game tie-in books, are the ones that are just legitimately good fantasy whether you've played the game or not. And then if they're doing their job, by the time you're done with the book, you want to play the game.
Right, right. Not enough for me to go out and buy an Xbox, but if I had an Xbox, I suppose I might consider picking up the Gears of War game.
Yeah.
You know, just to fight some of these grubs.
Did you ever read? Because I know you play the Elder Scrolls game.
Sure.
Did you ever read The Infernal City or Lord of Souls?
No, I always meant to.
Oh, they're so good, John. You've got to read them. Everybody should read them.
Okay, I'll put that on my schedule. Let's see, next Tuesday at 3 o'clock, I will start reading. No, probably not, but I will consider it.
They're
really
good. I mean, really, really good.
Well, one of the things I noticed about the Gears of War book was that it was written by Karen Travis, and she's well known within these circles for doing these game tie-in books. So are there authors, I guess, that kind of make their name, like, doing this? I mean, I think Karen has done other things,
yeah,
but she...
There are authors that do what's called professional fan fiction, and that basically means they do a good job writing in somebody else's sandbox. Mm-hmm. So, like, Greg Keyes, the guy who wrote The Infernal City and Lord of Souls, he's written other things. He's written his own work, which pretty much nobody gets a job doing professional fan fiction unless they've published their own book at some point. But then, you know, he just is really good at looking at somebody else's, you know, world and writing within that and continuing within that. Which, if you think about it, is a lot of what, like, television writers do. You know, there's a producer or a developer that comes along, and they may write the initial story, or they may even write a few episodes every season. But then other writers come in and write those characters and, you know, progress them through the overarching content that the producer or the developer has come up with.
Right. No, that makes sense. I know, like... Well, some writers become known for certain series. I believe is it Greg Bear who does the Halo novels?
Yeah, that sounds right. And it's Greg somebody.
Yeah, I'm looking at Karen Travis has done one of those too.
Yeah, she's actually done more than one, but she's not the only person who writes for Halo.
Right.
There's,
okay.
You know, I wish Colin was here actually right now, but he's out. But yeah, you know, and that's the thing is, if you've got a big game world like Halo does, for instance, you know, it's got, what are there, four Halo games out now?
Yeah. I mean, there's the whole story arc, and now there's going to be the TV show.
Sure. And then there's all the DLC and the books, and the books are written by different people and they write different aspects. And, you know, that's, if you're really into something, the books can make it so much richer. For instance, I don't know if you read the Mass Effect books.
I did not. Cool. That's because I was so pissed off at the ending of Mass Effect that I really didn't want to have anything else to do with Mass Effect after
that. The books are about the part that is before all that.
Right, right. I'm sure.
And
I'm
they're
sure. I mean,
so good. And for those of us who are huge Mass Effect fans and you know, love the Shepard, whether it was Fem Shep or regular Shep or whatever, the background in the books is so good. It's just, I can't even tell you how great it is. They're so worth reading. They're like the Oblivion books. They're just so good.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. Now, as far as the authors go, and I'm sort of leaning on you a little bit since like, again, I know you study this more than I do. So I've seen press releases though that are like where they get an author who is famous for doing something else.
Sure.
And they have them come and they're like, I've seen it a lot in, for example, like with the Neverwinter Nights, series, where they have a fantasy author who's written, things before in that nature. And they're like, hey, we got him. And it's a big coup for them that he's coming and he's going to write a book set in our game world. And from what I've seen, sometimes those projects aren't necessarily as good as when you have somebody like Karen Travers, for instance, who continually writes within a certain game world. I don't know. It just seems like it's hard for that author to come in and play in somebody else's sandbox.
I think that,
you know,
entirely depends on the author. Karen
sure.
Travers, you're right, does a lot of it. But like Drew, I'm going to butcher his last name. I think it's Carpetian. Is mm-hmm. the guy who wrote the Mass Effect books.
Okay.
But he also has written a lot of Star Wars books.
Oh,
and
okay.
And so, you know, he knows how to write in somebody else's world. But then he's also done Children of Fire, which is like his own stuff, which is also really good. And I think he also wrote the Temple Hill books and, you know, some other stuff. It really depends on the author. And I think you're right that some of them don't do as good a job when it's not their characters and not their world. But then there are others who, you know, they're just good writers. And they can write
anything.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure you could get Stephen King to come in and write an amazing book about about a game world if you were so able to do that and you had several million dollars to pay him to do it. I'm guessing that he could probably do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of authors can. It just really depends on, you know, what their inclination is and you know, and certain authors get known even more for their fan fiction stuff than they do for their own work. You know,
like a lot
of the Star Trek authors, like I said, everybody who gets a contract like that has their own book first. But then
often
their, you know, their Star Trek books or their Mass Effect books or their, you know, Halo books just have so much more reach than their own work that effectively is what they get known for.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know, and I guess it does depend, you know, on the author. Oftentimes, how good the author is and able to play in somebody else's sandbox. I mean, it's interesting as opposed to a world that they created. The other thing that I've seen, which is a big trend, I think, and another book that Colin loved was the Guild Wars: Sea of Sorrows, and that was written by Ree Sobeski. And she's actually a developer for the game world. So obviously she has a huge hand in it. And a lot of the BioWare guys do that, where they're developers for BioWare and then they come out with books. So that might be actually the best of both worlds if they're a good writer and they also create the game.
Well, writing the game story and writing all the dialogue and all that stuff, that's writing. So I don't think it's a huge leap for the guys who are writing the game lore and writing the dialogue and all that for the game to then move into doing books. Because, you know, just games, just like movies, there's always stuff you can't fit in.
Sure.
Now, games,
sure,
I think, have more room, particularly the ones with the big open worlds. You know, you can fit a lot in, and there's always DLC.
Well, you'd be surprised. I just read a report from we were talking about Dragon Age earlier, and it was from the developers, and the developers were talking about, you know, somebody asked them, I guess, is the game almost done? And their response was, yeah, but the problem is there's too much stuff, and so now's the point where we're cutting things out of the games, and then they're like, it's so painful.
Well, and see, that's the thing, is that there's always more that you can't fit in. You know, particularly to these fantastic games that have these huge, you know, I mean, look at just all the lore for the Elder Scrolls, for instance. You know, you can't fit in every aspect that you want to when you do games like that. And Guild Wars is like that. And Halo is like that. So I think there's always room for the novels to come in and give you, you know, added enjoyment.
Well, especially for like Guild Wars, and World of Warcraft is also another one that has a huge amount of books that come with it. They're sort of lucky in a sense, whereas their worlds, I mean, they're massively multiplayer games, so the worlds are huge, you know, and so they can take any little aspect of that world, some island off in the middle of nowhere that, you know, five people have visited in the game, and create a huge epic story around it, and really not affect the canon of the game world. So I mean, they're kind of free to sort of do whatever they want in those types of things.
The same is true with the Elder Scrolls. There's so much lore, and the history of the game goes back to what, 96, 98, something like that. You know, and it's so massive that when he did the Infernal City and Lord of Souls, I mean, you could literally turn those two books into video games and have zero effect on anything that's currently in existence.
And I think the best books, actually, the best books, just like, I mean, we did a show a while ago when we were talking about movie tie-ins and game tie-ins to movies and how they're usually bad. But I think the best ones are ones that you don't follow the adventure of the game doesn't follow the movie. So you're like, okay, I watched the movie and now I'm going to take the ring to Mordor and follow the exact same thing that I just saw in, you know, the best games are ones that maybe take another character or another aspect of the game and let you play within that world. And maybe there's cameos from, you know, the characters that, you know, from the movie or whatever.
But it spins off somewhat.
Yeah, and I think those are the best way to do books, too, is to let you experience that flavor, but not necessarily yet follow the events of the game exactly, you know?
A game that did a great job of that, and also has a great number of books, the whole world, is the Star Wars series. What was the Star Wars series with the guy? It's like you played as a Jedi, but he was kind of going dark. Was it Dark Force?
Oh, well, Dark Forces, there was the whole thing with Kyle Katan. He was in Dark Forces. He had Jedi powers, I think, but he was like trying to avoid using them or something.
Yeah, he was somehow connected. But anyway, the, you know, characters like Princess Leia and Darth Vader and stuff like that would make cameos in that game so that it connected you to what you were used to and that you liked, but it also was its own full story and character.
Yeah, every now and then you'd see somebody on the comm link, like, talking to Vader or something, but you didn't actually go one-on-one with him.
Right, so it in no way affected canon, but allowed you to see and be connected to characters that you knew and understood.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
it was a fantastic job with that. And I think that the books that are good, that are based on games, you're right, they do that exact same thing.
Right. And we're not saying that every book, you know, based on a game is good. I mean, it's just like anything else. There are good ones and there are bad ones. I mean, there was one that we reviewed for World of Warcraft. It was called Tides of War. Well, it was actually called Jaina Proudmoore, Tides of War, because Jaina was the mage who was they did the formula, right? They took somebody who wasn't, you know, a part of the known game world, and they created a whole thing around her. She just, I don't know, she happened to be a terrible character, I guess, or written badly.
Yeah, Kathleen Patches is our World of Warcraft reviewer, and she was so angry by the time she was done with that book.
Yeah, and the author in that case was Christine Golden, who is a New York Times bestselling author. I don't know if she was just out of her element trying to write a Warcraft book, or if she was trying to take that sort of... It sort of came off as sort of a young adult's angst-ridden book that just didn't fit in with the Warcraft world at all. Especially when you look at other books like Wolfheart, which really gets to the heart of like heroism and, you know, gritty mano a mano combat and stuff like that. And Tides of War just didn't have any of those elements.
No, yeah, and she was very frustrated because at first she was she was pleased that they had chosen to focus on a female character that was a strong lead, but then it just kind of completely fell apart. I don't know what happened there. I don't know if it was the author or if it was limitations from editorial. I don't know what the deal was, but it did not coalesce well into a good book.
And that happened.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that one. I mean, the girl, the main character, Miss Proudmoore, the mage, I mean, it was like, first she was real indecisive. She didn't know what to do. And then she was blinded by love for this dragon. Then so she didn't know what to do because she didn't want to upset her lover. And then she was hysterically angry and she didn't know what to do because she was too mad to see logic. And then they talked her out of it in like two pages and she decided to just go back to whatever she was at the beginning of the book. And yeah, it was weird. Story arc.
Yeah,
yeah.
Trust me, I had to listen to a lot of that. Angry ranting
so,
from Kat.
Yeah, but generally these books they're pretty good. Yeah. So, and a lot of them come out. It's interesting. Some companies they come out with them before the game comes out. So if there's a new game coming out, it'll come out beforehand, and I believe those are probably, you know, trying to get you to buy the game. You know, hey, here's a cool book, and it's sort of a part of the marketing scheme. And then some of them come out afterwards. A bridge, like between
right.
games.
You know, so they're like, okay, well, this game takes place, 50 years after whatever, or 5 years, or 10 years, or whatever the time period is. We're going to do this novel so we can bridge the gap so that people know what happened. And then you anticipate playing the new game because you're like, oh, okay, well, now I'm ready for this. You know, and I like the bridge books. I think they often are the best because you get the feeling that that was some of the stuff the developer just had to leave out because there wasn't room.
Yeah, and well, you've experienced this before, Marie. I think a lot of people, when they really get into a game that they like, I know a lot of people do this where – it's like, I mean, like the most recent one I had this with was Grand Theft Auto 5 because it told you whenever you saved the game what percentage of the game you were finished.
Oh, yes.
Once I got up into like the 70-some%, I'm like, damn it, it's getting over. I don't want it to be over. And I know people like with the one where Square and the Mickey Mouse characters get together, the Kingdom
yes.
Hearts series. I know people who have not finished the Kingdom, who get to like the last scene in the Kingdom Hearts, in a Kingdom Hearts game and won't finish it because they don't want the experience to be over. So they just never end the game. And I know people more or less kind of feel that way. So the books, in a sense, are a way to continue that, to leave you immersed in that world, learning about that world, having fun within that world, and I guess could allow you to finish the game then too, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and the other time I really appreciate those books is when you have, you know, some of these games take so long from one game to the next, like the Elder Scrolls game.
Or
Mass
Effect.
Another. You know, these are long periods of time for these massive games. And mm-hmm. the books sort of, they just allow you like a little tether, you know, back to that world. And it is nice to have that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's cool. And like I say, in generally, that's why, Jin, we review an awful lot of books, and there's actually a book review section, right on our front page. So you can check that out. And, so Marie, are you reading anything good right now, game related?
You know, I am not reading anything game related right now. It's funny because often when I do book reviews for Jen, it's for, the nonfiction stuff.
Right. Yeah. There's the whole bunch of like how to develop a video game or the art of video games or
right.
stuff like that.
You know, that's the stuff I usually end up getting, guide to gamification, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I haven't been sent any of that recently. I'm sure. So it has a tendency to come in batches for me, you know? So,
oh, sure. Sure.
But yeah, not at the moment.
Cool. All right. Well, good enough. There's certainly a bunch. So, any of our listeners out there, you can check out our, You can check out us at GameIndustry.com, and on the front page, if there's not an active book review on the front page, you can click where it says more book reviews, and you can see all of them, actually, that we've posted. And the most recent one, the Dragon Age game, which is pretty amazing. I definitely think that one's the Masked Empire, definitely a recommendation from our reviewer. Another one that he reviewed recently was Storm of Light, which is the Diablo 3 title, which he thought was pretty good. And
I enjoyed that book.
Yeah, that's another one where you've got kind of a massive game world, and you can talk about different angels and devils and things like that without really affecting the game, which is pretty cool. So definitely read all that stuff. If you're looking for a serious read, we'd highly recommend Marie's novel. So, Marie, what's your book called again?
It's One Big Beautiful Thing, and you can find it on Amazon.
Okay, good enough. I hope that you guys will try it out. We're also on Facebook, Pinterest, Google Plus,
Twitter.
We do Twitter as Gin Lounge, so you can find us all those places. So until next time, we hope that your games and your books are both 5 gem titles. Very awesome. So, Marie, thanks for joining
me
today. And I will let you get back to – you got to find a good game book to read. or I'll get you some how to program C++ video games or something, if that's what you're more interested in. All right, everyone, take care, and we'll see you next time right here at GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge.